First of all, select an idea which I like to do very much, for the work takes a very long time.
This is the Illusion of Movement. Please join our host to learn about another woman in action.
This is the Illusion of Movement. Hello, how you doing? I'm Perry Starr. Today I'm going to be talking about Lotta Reiniger. I'm going to be sharing with you some information that shows the level of innovation and invention that this very particular animator had on the industry, and you may not even know. That's what I'm all about, sharing stuff that you might not already know. So welcome. I actually learned about Lotta in one of my animation classes a couple of semesters ago, and it was one of those moments that I could physically feel the impact of what she created. I was so impressed by the amount of time and effort and talent that it took to create her work. Just truly, it made an impression on me. I always get affected by seeing genius at work, you know. She was born Charlotte Reiniger, born in Germany, and she loved Japanese paper cutout silhouette puppet shows. They were really popular at the time. And instead of playing, she preferred to create the puppets and perform with them. She was actually inspired by the films of Georges Méliès, who made a trip to the moon in 1902. It's hard to believe that it's so long ago, but it's still referenced as some of the earliest special effects used in film. So I can imagine how Lotta felt at age 15, seeing these things on the screen for the first time, you know, seeing the rocket crash into the moon's eye and being inspired to kind of make creative moving pictures with her art rather than just acting. She did act. She attended a school with Paul Wegener, who was an actor and director, and he was kind of her mentor and teacher. He had directed and acted in some films at the time as well, very artsy, special effects driven films that group made. In fact, her work is in Wegener's Pied Piper of Hamelin, and as a result, she got a spot focusing on animation and special effects at the Institute for Cultural Research. And that's where she ended up meeting her husband, Carl Koch. And this was in 1919. That's over 100 years ago. And these people were the pioneering filmmaking. As a result, she got a spot focusing on animation and special effects at the Institute for Cultural Research. And that's where she ended up meeting her husband, Carl Koch. These people were the pioneering filmmaking. And she was definitely an essential part of that. It never went away. She was just so driven to always cut paper. She had been doing it since she was a kid. Tiny scissors, take a piece of black paper, and literally just create a puppet, cutting the pieces out so intricately. You know, some of her characters are so intricate, and put them together in a way where they could, you know, the limbs could all be moved, but not necessarily attached to each other. You know, when you're a little kid and in like elementary school and you make crafts with those pins that you kind of push through the paper and then you bend. And so you can make like a scarecrow or a skeleton or something. And they have these little pins in the joints so that they can move. But she didn't even really pin them together because she knew she was going to need to be able to move them in any way she needed. You know, she just knew. And what she didn't know already, she definitely, as a person who's driven to troubleshoot pretty much constantly, that's one thing that I'm definitely impressed with, her perseverance, you know, trying to figure out a way over any obstacle on her own. I mean, she did have a small group of fellow creators, like I said, Wegener and Reinhardt, and her husband, you know, was also a creator. But for the most part, she was very self-driven and just kind of did her own thing. You know, she said herself that she was cutting paper since she could hold the scissors. And I think a lot of us wish that we had such an intense focus on what our purpose is, you know, especially as a creative. You know, I'm sitting in my studio and I have any material that I want to create, anything I want, and I will fit, you know, start things and not finish them because I want to do everything. But Lotta definitely knew exactly what she wanted to do from day one. And that, to me, is impressive. She was 20 when she created her first animation, and it was 5 minutes long. And I think we all know how long it can take to make a 5-minute animation, even with the technology that we have these days. A 5-minute animation is a feat. Thinking about the fact that she's, you know, hand cutting all of the puppets and then, you know, taking photos and editing them all together on film, frame by frame. And if you ever watch, you know, I definitely highly recommend that you search for Lotta Reiniger on YouTube, watch some of her movies. She's done The Adventures of Prince Achmed. I'll lead right into that. That's actually being credited as the oldest known feature-length animated film in the history of cinema. 12 years before Disney made Snow White, which is often the general public often thinks of Snow White as the first. Lotta was a woman, and she did it with her small team of people around her. Walter Ruttmann and Oscar Fischinger, making abstract visual and sound films using light and shapes and animation. She recruited them to help with backgrounds and special effects. Her first animation won awards and critical acclaim. And from all the research that I've done, it really feels like she was embraced by everyone in the film and art communities around her, which seems strange when you think about the fact that it was Germany in the early 20th century. You know, we all have impressions of what a woman's role was in the early 1900s, and they had certain expectations from society at that age. And I haven't found any record that she had any children at all. I mean, she did get married. But her husband was another creator. You know, he was an artist in his own right. So they were hanging out with other guys like, you know, Ruttmann and Fischinger and Wagoner. They were all creating this movement of abstract, special effects-driven animations. If you ever see An Optical Poem by Oscar Fischinger, that's definitely worth checking out. He also uses paper and fishing line and lighting to animate what he believes space would look like. And it's just astounding. Always keeping in mind that these creations were done by hand. Thousands of pieces all put together in a way that's entertaining for us. That's something that I really respect. And it feels like she was really respected as a peer at the time. The Adventures of Prince Achmed, she made because a man she knew bought a whole bunch of film stock as kind of an investment, I guess. I found the information in an article. It was really kind of vague on what exactly that meant, but he asked her to use it to make a feature-length film. And she spent the next 3 years making Prince Achmed with just 5 other people. In comparison with Disney, I found this quote, you know, on Disney's site says, "Guided by the vision of a master storyteller, 32 animators, 1,032 assistants, 107 in-betweeners, 10 layout artists, 25 background artists, and 65 special effects animators, and 158 inkers and painters, and countless production staff came together to create the masterpiece." You know, I don't want to diminish the beauty and accomplishment of Snow White, because it's truly gorgeous and obviously very significant, and I don't have any issues with the movie itself, but it's almost as if, you know, and I think that Disney does this a lot, is, you know, pushes the more is better ideology, right? Like, oh my, this movie is so much better because look at all these people. Look at, can you believe all these people? It took all these people to make this movie, where I'm over here saying, I can't believe only 7 people made Prince Achmed. Like, I'm more impressed by less people making something just as impressive, in my opinion. I mean, obviously that's my opinion, but it's interesting. One of the most significant elements of Ms. Reiniger's career is the fact that she was responsible for working out the multiplane camera, which, if you are not aware, a multiplane camera has many plates of glass and stacked, kind of like a Photoshop document. You know, there are layers so that the photographer or videographer or whoever is recording the images can independently move the layers. So the background can be moved slow while the middle ground can go a little faster, or, you know, vice versa, however. And then, you know, obviously the top and most forefront layers would be usually the characters. Sometimes if you look at Hanna-Barbera cartoons from the 80s, where they're, you know, they're recycling a lot of stock footage from their own cartoons, you can actually tell what items are going to be activated because of how bright they are in the foreground, because you can just tell that they're kind of highlighted. So, okay, obviously that's going to move next. But the multiplane camera is essential for creating dimension, you know, like a 3D type of effect. And she literally figured out how to make one out of a table. She like cut a big hole in her table. Made a multiplane camera. And not only did she make it, she shared how she made it. And that was in 1926. Created the multiplane camera. And now I know that there are often inventions that are happening, you know, in synchronicity in different areas. You know, if you believe in the universal consciousness the way that I do, you know, you understand that it's not really possible for one person to have an idea only. But sometimes you find out that other people have already had that idea. In the world we live in now, obviously, it's very easy to do a Google search or something like that and find out if someone has already thought of this idea, so that you make sure that you don't take full credit for quote unquote inventing something. But the critical acclaim and the accolades and the attention that Lotta was getting in Germany definitely made her visible, right? And she made The Adventures of Prince Ahmed. She finished it in 1926. She used the multiplane camera to film that movie. She made the multiplane camera to film the movie. And Ub Iwerks, who was working for Disney at the time, is credited with inventing the multiplane camera in 1933. And this is an issue for me. It's actually, you know, I find myself getting really frustrated by it, because I have no doubt that he knew it existed. Yes, there was no internet. There was, I understand that. Yes, I understand that it was the early 1900s. It was pre-World War II. But I still have no doubt that Ub Iwerks did not originate the idea of the camera, but maybe perfected a model and brought it to Disney in 1933. But he is, like I said, he is credited with it. All over the place. I mean, now there's a lot of truth coming out and history of women in animation that are helping to bring certain situations like this to light. So obviously, Lotta is credited in many places. That's how I know. But as a general rule, and like I said, for the general public, they're informed by Disney that it was Ub Iwerks. So we have a theme, you know, which will probably come up a lot. You know, we have the brilliant mind of a truly gifted and naturally talented, intelligent woman who thought outside the box, what tools she had available to her at the earliest stage of animated films. And she did it only for her use to get the job done, and shared her idea to help others get their jobs done. And Disney gets recognition. There's actually an old video with Walt, you know, Walt Disney himself, in 1957. You can watch that on YouTube as well. I've actually seen it several times. And he's teaching us about how they developed this camera for feature-length films. And of course, there's no mention of anyone using this camera. Totally, look at what we did. Another point is that, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, well, what little girl even knows that Seven Dwarves exist? It's all about the princesses at this point because of the merchandising. And the fact of the matter is, Lotta made 49 animated films in her career, which included Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella, released back in 1922. Those fairy tales are now so popularized by Disney that they are considered the gold standard. But please do yourself a favor and look up a lot of Reiniger's Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella. I'm not sure about Sleeping Beauty, but I know Cinderella is definitely on YouTube. And that was in 1922. And she made her final film in 1980. It's called The Four Seasons. So she created her entire life. I mean, this woman escaped the Nazis and moved to London in World War II. I think she took a break from creating, and I'm not sure why. One of my personal favorites, though, of all that I've seen so far is The Frog Prince. Because as, you know, as impressive as black silhouettes are, and the intricacy of how she cuts them out and animates them with realistic movement, and that's very impressive. But the Frog Prince is actually, she switched to color, and it's, she makes everything move. As I make, you know, little animations myself, I have different characters or accessories that exist, and they may like fall or float or just have some kind of neutral movement. But if you watch The Frog Prince, you'll see what I mean. Every single creature has fully functional moving parts. Every limb, all their eyes, everything moves on every little tiny element of this animation. Everything can move, and it does. It's just so intricate. The Frog Prince, he's trying to retrieve a gold ball from the bottom of the well, and this octopus on the bottom. It's incredible. Definitely have to check that out. That one is on YouTube for sure. I will include links to all of the films that I'm referencing under the description of the episode. I will leave it right there for you so you can check all of these out. She does not mess around. Everything has a life of its own. Nothing was simplified for the sake of saving time. Nothing. And I'm definitely guilty of that. It's only modified to improve the quality, and you can definitely tell. So the question is, what happens when a woman animator, artist, filmmaker, who is successful and respected in Germany pre-World War II, and she gets pushed aside this way when it comes to accurate historical accounts of invention and innovation in animation? At what point did someone decide to cut her out of the equation? Is it literally just because she's a woman? Or was it just because she was in another country and they thought that Americans wouldn't know or care? Why? That's the question. I would love to hear your thoughts about that. So please follow me on Instagram, post on this episode's post. Let me know what you think about this topic. I don't know whether or not Lotta was affected by this, if she had feelings about people basically taking her ideas and monetizing and becoming famous for them. I cannot find that. And that's actually from her, if she was comfortable and so hyper-focused on her own creating that nothing else mattered, then that's just another thing I'm impressed by, honestly. So easy to get distracted by ideas and actions of people outside your scope of day-to-day life, you know? Things are only important if you make them important. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of us wish that we could make some things less important. So another question is, like, if she didn't care, should we care? Like, should I be righteously vengeful for her? Is that even necessary? I don't know. I obviously am personalizing it if I had that happen. And I, honestly, I've had it happen on a smaller scale. So maybe I'm, you know, just projecting. But I care, because it affects the whole industry when women pioneers get swept aside and forgotten. I really appreciate the resurgence of information about Lotta Reiniger and her films being shared more often and talked about, and the historical importance of her impact on animation.
Don't forget to check the links watch some of Lotta Reiniger's animations. Thank you for listening to Illusion of Movement. See you next time.